Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Ah, welcome to the Wednesday edition. SJS here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We're going to be talking in a few moments with Chris Wheeler. You get an idea on the state of the Phils. Yes, about whether Doc is okay or not. Yes, we'll be discussing that. That's the question of the day that Kevin is demanding that we ask Wheels. We'll ask him some other baseball-related questions as well. The Phillies did lose their opener 7-5 to the Braves on Monday night. Cole Hamels was lit up for a few home runs. The bullpen not exactly great, but Chase Utley was very good in the opener. We'll talk about that. We'll also really start to get into the meat and potatoes of the Final Four. Tomorrow, Dick Girardi will be on the show. And more of our discussion on Kevin's fantasy world, where if, for example, he has Alan Craig on his fantasy team, and the Phillies are winning by two, and Craig hits a three-run homer to beat the Phillies, is Kevin happy or is Kevin sad? Or does he rationalize it by saying, you know, it's 162 games, I could sacrifice that just for the cash? It's great having a real fan on the show. But first, Above the Noise with Dan Patrick.
Second baseman Dave Cash, shortstop Larry Bowen, third baseman Mike Schmidt, left fielder Greg Luzinski, center fielder Gary Maddox.
Chris Wheeler today on the show. Tomorrow, Gary Dolphin from the NIT Final Four. He'll be announcing the NIT Championship game tomorrow night. Dick Girardi as well in the NCAA tournament. We are loaded with guests. But today, Wheels, yes, I will ask about Roy Halladay, because obviously you've been waiting for weeks for white smoke to appear that he's all right.
Yes, I would like to see the white smoke.
It's not the big story of the day. The big story of the day is Mike Rice being fired justifiably at Rutgers. The head basketball coach there let go after the video finally came out of what practice looked like in his first couple of seasons there. Pushing players, shoving players, throwing basketballs at players. Now you can see him yelling and screaming at players, but evidently he was beyond just plain cursing. He was also getting personal, and also slurs were used, and especially on a campus where they've already had one awful incident in which a young man who was gay was ended up killing himself. So the sensitivity is even, you know, which should be great all the time anyway, was even greater on that campus.
Not to mention the fact that he threw basketballs at players' heads.
Well, I said that. He threw basketballs at heads, legs, and an area in between.
Now, I understand a quick pass to the chest type of thing, you know, to get attention. Maybe I could understand that, but, you know, there's so much bad that can happen when you hit somebody in the head.
No, it's called abuse. It's not going to be tolerated in any workplace. No workplace or any place that we go to, is it going to be tolerated? It's not going to be tolerated. You can't get physical with people. And now, if you are moving chess pieces trying to explain a play, yes, you're absolutely, in my opinion, allowed to put your hands on a player if you're moving the player around to a spot because you're trying to demonstrate something. Okay, grab by shoulder. Okay, now come on, Mike. You got to move. You got to be in this spot. Okay, Alan, you come over here like that. You know, that kind of teaching goes on all the time because it is a game of motion and movement. Same thing with football, where you're trying to demonstrate where they're supposed to be. So you're allowed to me at that point, you're allowed to put your hands on them and do something like that. Because you're now demonstrating, okay, you got to come over here, you're here. Now you got to come over, you got to set this screen here like this. Okay? Or you're on defense. Okay, look, you've got to come out, you got to be in this spot here. Okay? You're running it too flat over here. I need you back here. Nothing wrong with that. That's teaching. Okay? What Mike Rice did went way beyond. It does not just cross the line, it obliterates the line. It's abusive. Throwing basketballs at heads, knees, other parts, shoving guys, grabbing them. Right, that obliterates the line.
What do you think about the athletic director saying, you know, he wanted to make an attempt at rehabilitating Coach Rice?
Knows him, hired him, probably felt like he wanted to give him every opportunity, every chance. But when it comes to his job, if I'm the university president, this is what I do. I call in the current basketball team. And I sit them down and I say to them, he was suspended for 3 games to start the season. He was fined $75,000. And he was told to undergo anger management. What was Coach Rice like this year in practice and in games? Okay. Did he ever get physical with anybody? The answer is no. Did he throw a basketball at anybody? The answer is no. Okay, we know obviously swearing occurs in practice. My apologies out there, but it's a fact of life, and I wouldn't worry about it too much if I were you. Okay, but did he get personal in what he said, or did he use any slurs? If the answer to each of these questions is no, he didn't. Oh yeah, he was angry. Yeah, he yelled. Oh yeah, he got mad. The whole thing. No. I don't want to hear about that. I want to hear: did he grab you? Physical? Shove you? Did he throw a basketball at you? Did he verbally abuse you in a personal way, or did he use any slurs? If the answer to every question is no, then Tim Pernetti, the athletic director, as far as I'm concerned, should keep his job. If the answer to any of those questions happens to be yes, that means that the attempt to rehabilitate him did not work. And as the athletic director who put this edict in place, he should have been attending practices every once in a while on an unannounced basis, and as the boss, he's allowed to see for himself as to whether his edict was being followed through. So I think the players and the assistant coaches, who are no longer intimidated by the presence of Coach Mike Rice and have the freedom to go into a president's office and sit down with the president and talk to the president about, you know, and have, I mean, I'm talking, the president needs to be the one to step up and say, I want you guys in my office tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, or what? When does everybody not have class? 6 o'clock tomorrow night? 6 o'clock tomorrow night. Sit down and talk about it. If the answers are satisfactory, then Tim Pernetti should keep his job, because by all accounts, he's an excellent administrator. By all accounts, he's an excellent administrator. He's been recognized by many organizations for being an excellent administrator. But if the answer to any of those questions happens to be yes, and it wasn't just an isolated incident, then at that point, Tim Pernetti's job security has to be called into question, because what he did not work at all.
Did Pernetti recommend, or did Rice go for anger management classes?
No, he told him he had to. It was part of the deal. Look, this is not, for people who don't, okay, the tape is new, all right, in terms of our ability to see it.
Right.
The story came out in November.
Yeah, he was fine, wasn't he?
All of us, he was suspended for 3 games.
Okay.
All of us knew that he was fined and suspended for his temper. Now, we did not know he was getting physical, although I believe one of the New York papers, it may have been the Newark Star-Ledger, said that he threw basketballs at players. Okay? Now, that was back in November 13-14. So the story was out there. It wasn't like this is, oh my goodness, look what happened, and we're all in a state of shock. What we're in a state of shock about is the ability to actually see him shoving a player, grabbing a player out of anger, then throwing a basketball at a head, throwing a basketball at a knee, throwing a basketball at a midsection. Okay, that's what is the shock part of this, where you actually see it. The actual story, everybody knew why Mike Rice was suspended 3 games and fined $75,000, and that he was, quote, working on his demeanor. We all knew that. Everybody knew that all season. Now, it was a big story initially, but then again, other circumstances happen. And what happened in this circumstance? Newtown. And all the New York papers obviously were covering Newtown. Went through the season, didn't appear to be any incidents at all anyway. Rutgers beat writers around, but they're not at practice. But for Tim Pernetti, I think the key for him in his job security lies in the answers that the players on the current team, no longer intimidated by Mike Rice, the answers that they give to the questions I just asked. If they're satisfactory in their answers, Tim Pernetti's fine as far as I'm concerned, and again, has a reputation of being an excellent administrator. But if the answers happen to go the other way, then it still continued. He still did this, he still did that, and it didn't work. That means that, and also, Tim Pernetti, look, you're the athletic director. You're allowed to go to any practice you want. Why? Guess who the boss is. Okay? You're the boss. You hire and fire coaches. You can go to practice. You can, you know, just like, you know, for example, if Roger wanted to come in and observe our show, he can. He's the boss. Right? Lawrence wants to come in, forget it. No way.
Draw the line.
Really? I don't know.
Ironically, Mark, he was just in a few seconds after or before you said that.
Mark's in his office laughing right now. But, you know, but he's the boss. He can sit in if he wants. You know, I mean, we've had people from Learfield sit in the broadcast booth. Athletic directors have sat in the broadcast booth. Presidents have sat in the broadcast booth. For one thing, I don't care. As you well know, drives you nuts.
It does make me a little nervous, but I can see where it wouldn't bother you at all.
No, it doesn't bother me in the least. But that's what I've had. I've had that in my lifetime. The Learfield guys have sat there. The university president sat there. You know, we've invited them in. Come on in. You can come in and sit down with us. I don't care. You know, I mean, you know, they signed the checks. Doesn't bother me. So Tim Pernetti, is the athletic director, is allowed to walk into practice and say, hey, look, if you have an issue with me being here, I'm sorry. I am the boss. So, you know, to me, there's a personal responsibility on his part to observe what was going on after he handed down this edict. If things are satisfactory, then he should be fine, in my opinion. And I think the current team, the one that went through this past season, I think holds the key, in my opinion, if it's done right, about his future. And if it turns out the answers are satisfactory, he should be just fine. The world, of course, wants to call for everybody's head all the time. You know, it's easy to sit in the cheap seats and, you know, and do the gladiator thumbs up, thumbs down thing. All right. Back with more. News is next.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Well, What question, Kevin, have you been aching to ask Chris Wheeler?
How's Doc? Is it okay? Is he okay? Is it just a bad spring? Should I be concerned? How else do you want me to word it?
Wow. Well, let's go to Wheels and Bluebell. Find out.
Well, it's good to talk with Steve from LeMoyne. It's always a pleasure.
There you go. Hey, one of the really nice things that you did is you made sure I got your book, View from the Booth, and thank you for what you wrote in there. That was very nice. Putting that together, how much of a labor of love was that for you?
Well, it was, Steve. That's a good way to put it because, before I was lucky enough to work for the Phillies for 42 years, I was a fan and went to a lot of games at Connie Mack Stadium when I was a kid. That was a ballpark of my youth, and the Vet was where I started to work, and also Citizens Bank Park. So it was fun to go back over some of the old stories when I was a kid and also the new stuff that I had been able to be around in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, and the stuff that I'm around right now. And, it sold pretty well, evidently, because they just asked me to write some more stuff for a paperback that just came out the other day. So, I think that's pretty neat. I'm still a little bit overwhelmed by it to think that people buy something that I have to say, but it's pretty neat, Steve.
Yeah, it is neat, and I think the book was really well done. What was the easiest part of it in writing it, and was there any part that was difficult in writing?
Well, I'll do the most difficult part was writing Vukovic, and I think people that read that part have told me how emotional that was, and also about Harry at the end when he died, we lost him that day in the booth in Washington. Those are the two toughest ones because those were two people that were very, very involved in my life. The easy part was writing about the good times, the years with Richie Ashburn. I wrote a chapter on Eric Gregg, who was so much fun as an umpire, and all the good times that we had, all the good years. I tried to gloss over the bad years as much as possible because there were some horrendous ones in there. But the good times were easy to write about, and my memories of being a baseball fan as a kid were really, I know you're a fan too, a baseball fan, and there's something about our sport, I think, that is just great for memories.
No question. And the book, by the way, is View from the Booth, paperback version coming out. And we'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later as well. Now, of course, tonight, Roy Halladay has been at the rock of Gibraltar for everybody he's been with. Toronto never once worried about sending him out there. The Phillies have never worried about sending him out there. How different is the atmosphere around this start tonight?
It's very different, Steve. There's apprehension involved. There's butterflies for everybody. You just don't know what you're going to get because it started last year on May 2nd right here when he had that 6-0 lead. I think it was in the fifth inning when McCann hit the grand slam and everything fell apart. And we lost that game like 15-13, I think it was. Sound like what a game that you should have done in the fall.
That's right.
With those numbers, it was crazy. And at that point, we all kind of looked at each other like, huh? What was that all about? Is he all right? And later on, we found out he wasn't, obviously. And then this year, the spring has been bizarre. He had a decent outing against the Tigers early at Lakeland. And then it started to go downhill a little bit. He got sick and pitched in a minor league game. Last time out, he was better. But it could be a work in progress. Hopefully, he doesn't go out there and have a terrible game tonight where everybody panics. Even if he weren't to be Roy Halladay, that you'll go out and see improvement. Because I think that's what it's going to be if, in fact, he's going to get back to anywhere near what he was before. He may never be the great overpowering guy that you think of pitching no-hitter when he goes out. But the guy is too competitive and still has too good of stuff, I think, to just totally write off as you and I talk here today. And tonight will be a good test.
And no question, is he the kind of guy that would admit that something isn't right, or is he hard to figure out?
Well, he admitted it finally that he had back problems last year that led to him altering his delivery, which led to a lot of problems that he had last year. At this point right now, for him to admit, he has alluded to the fact that maybe he doesn't have the same fastball that he had before and that maybe he will have to change some things, but he hasn't come right out and said, I'm a different guy. That I have to reinvent myself. And he still has tremendous stuff besides his fastball, but you have to work off your fastball if you're a major league pitcher. And he was always able to do that with his sinker, and then I had to develop all these other out pitches that he had. So, you know, we're just going to have to see what he can do.
And we know that when it comes to the starters, I mean, for the most part, the Phillies have guys that you feel like, you know, as the season goes along, can get you seven. Now the question, can you bridge it to get to Papelbon? That was an issue last year. Does Charlie Manuel feel after spring training that he has more comfort in that bridge area?
Yeah, especially with Mike Adams.
Yeah.
This guy, he's legit. You know, anything can happen. Who knows?
Right.
You go through the course of a long year. He had some injury problems, too, last year that hopefully were rectified by some surgery that he had after the season. He had the same thing that Carpenter had with that rib problem, making his arm and fingers numb. They think they took care of that, although with Carpenter it didn't work out that well. But they think he's fine, and this guy's a quality eighth inning guy, Steve. You know, you don't have to worry about situation with him as far as using a right-hander only against right-hander and then have a left-hander. Right now, that's his inning. So, yeah, if you can get to that point, you think you're going to be in much better situation to get to Papelbon. We had eight games last year where we had two outs in the eighth inning and couldn't get the third out to get to Papelbon.
Right.
That's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's just a crusher. That is a crusher every time. And watching Ryan Howard both the other night and also in spring training, it looked to me when I looked at his feet that he has – that the old balance is back for him. He's not favoring it one way or the other. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. You can tell he has strength. This is a 250 disc guy. It's like a tight end almost, blowing an Achilles.
Right.
And then coming back on a big body like that last year for half the season. He tried, but he's never going to run fast. He never really did run fast anyway, but he's not going to run real fast. But you're right about getting his legs under. It's kind of like watching Utley now. Chase has his legs under him,
yeah.
And they're going to be different players because of that.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about Utley, because Utley looks like that length, short, sweet stroke he has is very much back in vogue, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's tough to just play with your upper body.
Yeah.
You know, you see, you know, we try to play golf, and you'll see you go out there and watch some guy swing a golf club, and all he uses his upper body, and it doesn't go very far.
No.
Or if it does, it goes right, usually, if you're a right-hander, it'll go to the right. So when you watch Chase hitting without his legs, it's totally different. Now he has a base under him, and you hit right on it, the quick stroke. He still has that ability to wait, and then pop, as he's able to do. He has big hands, big forearms. He doesn't look that big and strong, but when you get near him, he's a lot stronger than you think he is. And he has tremendous bat speed, and that's something you don't teach.
Your impressions of Ben Revere and what he can mean at the top?
Well, I think the first game showed what he can do, whether he hits first, second, eighth, or ninth, and that's that 12-pitch at bat he had the other night.
Right.
He basically got Hudson out of the game. Hudson was just sailing along in that game. You know, we were doing what Hudson wants you to do, and that's kill worms. You know, hit one ground ball after another. Let's thud, thud, thud. And that's what was happening. And then all of a sudden, Ben has this at bat, 12 pitches, and he wasn't the same guy out there. You know, Chase comes up and gets a big hit off him. All of a sudden, he could have gone ahead in the game. Ryan Howard, unfortunately, struck out, and then they walked Young, and then they got Brown out with a left-hander, Keegan Avilon. But he's got force. He can steal some bases. Now, you're not going to hit for power. The infielders are going to play way, or the outfielders are going to play way in on him when runners are in scoring position and all. And you may not get a lot of runs like Rollins can do out of that spot, but he's going to help in a lot of ways. You know, run the ball down in center field too.
And no question about that. Now, of course, they have to start the season without Carlos Ruiz, whom he'd be a guy that there'd be very few people I trade for. I've always liked Ruiz a lot. I mean, clutch behind the plate, just to get through it. Do you like how they can get through it here?
Well, you know, you talk about Ruiz now, Steve, and mention Molina in the same breath normally. And when you mention Ruiz with Molina from the Cardinals, that's pretty strong.
That's
they're
really
the two
strong.
Best catchers. Yeah, in our league, they're the two best. Can you get along? We'll find out. Do you want to go through this? No. You got one down, 24 to go, in my opinion. That's no knock on the two guys that are here, and Eric Kratz and Humberto Quintero. They're guys that can play in the big leagues and help you, but they're backup catchers, and that's what they are. And Carlos Ruiz is 1-2-3 in his profession. So for me to say that he's not going to be missed, he'll be missed tremendously. I hope not too much. We'll see after with the 25 games when we get him back.
Look, I mean, look, there are five guys. You pick five guys in both leagues combined. He's one of the five guys. I mean, every single time.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, I don't know about the American League, but in our league, Moline is one, and Carlos Ruiz is 1A.
Yeah, exactly. And that makes a big difference. Cliff Lee had some interesting outings last year where he, in the no luck category, he led the league in no luck. Did his stuff, though, in terms, did it look good in the spring? Did it look like he had command of what he wanted to do and how he wanted to go about his business?
Yeah, he's fine. He is what he is. He's a little bit spacey left-hander. Halliday will be sitting in front of his locker with a look on his face like a football player with his earbuds in. I don't know if anything's coming out of them, but he's just staring into his locker. And Cliff Lee could be flying an airplane around the clubhouse before his start. You know, that's the kind of personalities they are. They're just different. And left-handers are a little goofy in our business. So that's what Lee is. Stuff-wise, he's fine. He's fine last year, as you said. He had a strange year. It's one of those reasons why sometimes you can't look at win-loss and evaluate a pitcher. Because that win-loss on his situation with him last year, we didn't score any runs for him, or then he would have a lead and lose it, or our bullpen was so horrible, Charlie would leave him in a game maybe a little bit longer than he normally would because he thought, this boy has a better chance of getting him out in the eighth than what I got out there.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
So we had a lot of that stuff go on.
Well, you'd love to have the DH and have Michael Young and maybe occasionally have Ryan Howard be in that spot and be an American League team.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the acquisition of Michael Young. He played third base the other night. What can he mean as a player on the field and also as a clubhouse presence, because he does come from a winner?
Well, I'm not going to tell you I know him yet because he's not that kind of guy. He'll talk and he'll say hi and all, but he's all business. He's a presence in that clubhouse. He's a nice guy. He comes to work. That's what he does. And
yeah.
He was a lot better in spring training than I thought he'd be. And then he boxed a couple balls the other night. And, you know, you go, uh-oh. but he was very good. Ryan Sandberg did a great job with him in spring training, Stephen, helping him with some things, getting him started a little bit so that he's in motion when the ball's hit. He has some kind of movement. I don't mean motion. But it sounds like what you'd say. He has some kind of movement, you know, so that he's not just stationary when the ball's hit and that sort of stuff. So we hope he'll be all right. He's always been a great offensive player, and you hope you can get another year out of him that way.
Well, I know you've got work that you have to get ready for tonight. I just want to get back to the book for one more spot. What are the additions that you decided to put in for the book, for the paperback, that as additions?
Well, we wrote about asked me to write another chapter, and it was one of those as I was saying type of things. And it was kind of to bring up to date a little bit on what's been going on. And the addition of Hunter Pence at one time, then the trade of Hunter Pence, the move of Victorino. I talked a little bit about Tim McCarver going in the Hall of Fame and how important he was in my life. And I unfortunately had to end it with another very sad thing that I don't know if you even know this, but when we lost Andy Musser, it was on the same day that Joe died.
Oh my goodness!
It was a man. You know, obviously Joe's story was so big that day, and then I found out the next day that Andy had died that Sunday afternoon. So, I kind of had to go back at the end. I mentioned Joe in that thing about, you know, that I was lucky enough to have been around him a little bit when I was a kid, and how big Andy Musser was in my life, and that they ironically they would both pass the same day. So, you know, that was kind of tough too to write about.
Well, can't wait to see you. And you know, of course, the open invitation here. And you have my email. You have my email wheels from Bluebell. So if you have any questions for me on email,
right,
I will answer each one of them, friend to friend.
Hey, Fitz and John Butler were in spring training with us for a while. And I had a chance to have dinner. And they're two great guys, as you well know. And
yeah,
they're Philly boys. And they are intense. They're fun to be around.
In fact, well, at least you didn't get them out in the field because Fitz and Butler would have run that group through a few things.
Well, they went over and saw our new fitness facility, and they really enjoyed that. And I was thinking of you the other day, and I guess that you and Coach O'Brien think the pennant's won now with the Red Sox there for the first days. They looked pretty good the other day.
Yeah, well, you know how the emotions run in Boston. I mean, the season's now over.
Well, people are ready to jump off the bridge in Philadelphia. It's the same thing, you know that.
Yeah, they're over at Walt Whitman right now going, oh, no, they lost the opener. One down, 161 to go. Hey, Wheels, as always, my friend, pleasure. Shoot me an email, okay?
Okay, Steve, thanks. Anytime, keep in touch during the season now, please.
Thanks. Thanks, Chris. Chris Wheeler, did he answer your questions?
Yes. I'll let you know how I feel about those answers probably around 10 o'clock this evening.
America awaits your response.
I'm sure.
Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
I really need a used car.
Sunbury Motors has lots full of used cars.
But it has to be a good used car.
Well, they're not good.
What?
They're great. Sunbury Motors has over 300 used vehicles to choose from. Cars, SUVs, and trucks so good, we wouldn't sell them if we wouldn't drive them. That's probably why we consistently sell over 200 cars a month. And when it comes to new, Sunbury Motors is the largest Ford dealership in the central Susquehanna Valley. Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices.
And I'm a smart shopper, and I know what the price should be for the car I want.
Well, here at Sunbury Motors, you get our lowest price promise. We research prices on used cars so much that if you find a better deal, we'll beat it. That's a promise. So here's your keys.
Thanks.
Take a test drive today at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and our Kia dealerships at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Shop 24/7 and see our inventory at sunburymotors.com. That's sunburymotors.com. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Welcome back. It's great to have you with us on this Wednesday. Our thanks to Chris Wheeler joining us from Atlanta. Tomorrow, Gary Dolphin will join us from Times Square, from the Marriott Marquis, where Iowa is staying. That's where all the teams for the NIT Final Four stay. I know I'm the all-time record holder in consolation games announced, which a record can never be broken. They've dropped the consolation game. But we'll talk to him about Iowa's championship game appearance tomorrow night when Iowa takes on Baylor. And Matt and Dick Jordy will also join us tomorrow. Talk about the Final Four. Mike Rice fired today. Ed Rush, same story. Ed Rush, the head of officiating in the Pac-12. This is another major issue that also has to be dealt with. This was, you know, I think, first of all, where you say something also has an impact. Where you say something has an impact. If he had made this comment in a restaurant with the other officials and it was a social night out and the beverages are flowing and so forth and everybody's kidding around and he makes that in jest, blah, blah. Okay, I can buy it. But this was a meeting about the tournament. And because the place was a meeting dealing with the tournament, it has a different, you know, kidding or not, it has a different feel to it. And that's why what he said has, you know, carries so much weight. It's where it was done. It was an actual meeting with officials dealing with the tournament. Sure, maybe it's said in jest, oh, yeah, whatever. No, it's a meeting. Okay, this was not over, okay, let's all go over to the little Bennigan's over here, have a couple of beverages, and in the course of the, hey, anybody rings them up, I'm going to give you $5,000 a trip to Cancun. Ah, Gaddy, you're the greatest. Yeah, sure. No. One thing when it comes to officiating in sports, it must remain as unstained as possible. The integrity of the game is at stake every time out because whether, you know, you have to be realistic. Money exchanges hands. Gambling on sports does happen.
people do have money in the Arizona-UCLA semifinal game. Thus, there cannot be any moment where officiating is called into question. Tim Donaghy, of course, taught us that lesson. So it's a topic that, and Ed Rush, I believe Ed Rush many times worked with Tim Donaghy, so he knows. You can't just sit there, hey, everybody brings them up $5,000 fine, $5,000 or a trip to Cancun. Ha ha, you know, I'm sorry, it's not funny. If he said it in general about the tournament, maybe he can get away with it. But he actually said it about a specific coach and a specific team. Mike Rice doesn't cross the line. He obliterates the line. And it has, obviously, ramifications when we're talking about Penn State, because Rutgers is going to be playing Penn State 18 months from now on an every-year basis. And there's no way after the release of this video, no way after the release of that video, that Rutgers could possibly recruit with Mike Rice. There isn't a parent in the country that would allow their son to play for him. He calls my phone. I go, hey, I'm sorry. Best of luck, but you are not getting anywhere near my kid. And I don't mind my kid being coached, and I don't mind my kid getting yelled at. I do mind if he gets pushed, and I do mind if he gets shoved, and I do mind if he gets grabbed by an obsessed individual, and I do mind if they throw a basketball at him, and I do mind if I don't mind if he gets yelled at or coached up. That doesn't bother me at all. So he not only crosses the line, he obliterated the line. Second hour of the show, Kevin on Fantasy League. I'll talk sports.